we are going to resume our step study, our Common Ground Life Recovery Series. It's a study of the steps and the biblical foundations, the origins of these principles that not only enable a person to experience freedom and victory from addiction and behavioral things that hold us back, but really to move us closer to Jesus, just like our mission statement does. Today, we are blessed to have another teaching by Cindy Schroyer. One of the things that I want you to know when you see these different people, including myself up here, teaching, you need to know that not only is God doing something in all of you out there, but God is doing something in each of us through this teaching, and it is powerful. It's disarming, it's disturbing, it's confusing at times, but it's powerful and it's beautiful. And I want you just to enjoy what God has got for you through the voice of Cindy. Cindy, step eight.
Thanks, Craig. I certainly hope that at least one of you out there is experiencing what we're experiencing as speakers. Disarming is, I think, an understatement. I've spent the last week pretty much in uncontrollable tears. You'll probably see that today. I'm getting ready to do it already. So just strap in. That's what I've been doing all week. So in the past several weeks, we've learned about each of the first seven steps. We've become honest with ourselves. We found hope that we don't have to live in our wrongdoing, in our wrong being. We've chosen faith in God as the best solution to the problem of our wrong being. We've shown courage, taking an honest look at where our best efforts have gotten us so far. We've picked up integrity by confessing our faults to another person, and we've shown willingness to let go of our past behaviors. We've taken the mantle of humility in allowing God to remove those behaviors that separated us from God and from others. So, Thad, you want to go ahead and put that first slide up? The next one, sorry. Thank you. So this little guy is a friend of mine from the OA rooms. I want one of these in my home so badly. It's basically showing you what the steps do and where it brings us in those steps. It's together as a community, supporting each other, strengthening each other. As you see, they're intertwined. They're being able to stand as dependent on one another. Each of these steps builds on the previous one, and all of them, from four on down, hold hands with the first three steps. So it's a never-ending circle. Sorry, my little deal's going. Sorry. So this is they're interlocking. And oh, he brought me Kleenex. Isn't that sweet? So in this kind of an intimate relationship, there are no room for injuries, especially not purposeful ones. There is no room for secrets. Secrets are a big thing when we're in recovery because we don't want to expose ourselves. But this loving group here is living intimately in community and allowing for open and honest relationships to flourish. We have to move to step eight. So go ahead and put that one up there, Thad, for step eight. Perfect. That's pretty awesome. Thank you. Made a list of all persons that we had harmed and became willing to make amends for them all. The idea of making amends is not a new one. God went into depth explaining what he considered sin against other people and himself to be, and exactly how we take care of that. So first we're going to look in the book of Leviticus. So Thad, if you want to put Leviticus 6 up for me. Okay, I'm going to read down here. The Lord said to Moses, if anyone sins and is unfaithful to the Lord by deceiving a neighbor about something entrusted to them, or left in their care, or about something stolen, or if they cheat their neighbor, or if they find lost property and lie about it, or if they swear falsely about any such sin that people may commit, when they sin in any of these ways and realize their guilt, they must return what they have stolen or taken by extortion, or what was entrusted to them, or the lost property they found, or whatever it was they swore falsely about. They must make restitution in full, add a fifth of the value to it, and give it all to the owner on the day they present their guilt offering. It's pretty simple. You do something wrong, you fix it. We're responsible for keeping our accounts settled, always. As soon as we realize it, we need to fix it. When we sin against somebody, we're required to make that restitution. That's an amend. And we're supposed to give a little extra. So if we pick up $100 from somebody, what do? We give them back the $100 plus 20. What does that do to my budget? That hurts. That is painful, giving a little extra. So for the Israelites, they were required to make the sacrifice. For them, it was a ram, a perfect sacrifice of some kind. And I love how God orchestrates things here, because Sherry was talking about that exact thing. And she told me before the service that 6 weeks ago, God told her she was going to do this. He already knew that we needed to hear this. We need to know that we have a sacrifice to make, and we know that it's going to hurt. There is pain involved in making amends, because we're kind of shredding ourselves. So in case someone out here is thinking that this is Old Testament law, and thanks to the grace of God, we don't have to do this anymore, I'm going to point you to Matthew. In chapter 5, verses 23 and 24, it says, "Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar. First, go, be reconciled with your brother, and then come and give your gift." And I'll add, don't forget your extra 5%. Okay? Or 20%, sorry. The basis for our wrongdoing with God is an unwillingness to love God as he calls us to do. So first, the basis of all of it is that we don't love God. And as a result of that, we are incapable of loving others the way that God wants us to love them. Step 8 requires love, and yet another shift in our thinking. Oswald Chambers addressed this when he wrote, "The disposition of sin is not immorality or wrongdoing, but the disposition of self-realization. I'm my own God." This disposition may work out in decorous morality or indecorous morality, but it has the one basis: my claim to my right to myself. This step gives us the reason and the means to climb down off of our throne that was intended for God and to take our place at his feet. It invites us to view ourselves and all of you through his eyes instead of our own. So let's take a look at the first half of the step. Should be familiar. We went through this in step 4 when I taught about doing a list. Same thing that we saw in Leviticus. We're making a list of the things we've done wrong, and then we're going to make up for them. So the list-making process is also another way that we see the interweaving and interdependence of one step upon the other. You'll see that as we get through these, that they repeat. We make a list, we confess. We make a list, we confess. There's a reason for that. And the reason is that we have to make things right with God. We have to ditch that wrong being and start our right living with him so that we can live right with everybody else. So 4 steps ago, we made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. Now we can use that list to hone in on what God wants us to do with the folks we need to make amends to. The list can get long, and I know I can get whiny about it. I can be a baby about it. But God gives us that example, how to keep our accounts in order in those verses in Leviticus. And if you go back a couple chapters from there, back to chapter 4, you'll even see that he includes wrongs that we commit without any intent. But sin is sin, and once it's brought to light, it has to be acknowledged and dealt with. When I talked about step four, I mentioned my relationship with my ex-husband. And before I moved out here, God clearly told me, hey, you need to take care of something. And I was like, are you serious? Do you know what he did to me and my kids? Do you know? Did you see that? And God's like, yes, so what did you do? What's your responsibility? I want you to call him and go make an amends. Now, why did God tell me to do that? Mainly because I was harboring this awesome stuff called bitterness and anger. And I was passing that off to all four of my children. I was passing it off to my parents. I was passing it off to my friends. And I was wrong. Because I guarantee you, I guarantee you that in no marriage is there a one-way street. You are holding hands, skipping down the street, whether you're right or wrong, and you are injuring each other, and you are responsible for the damage that you do to your spouse, whether it's intent or not. You are responsible for you. What I do has no effect on what he does. He never has to apologize to me for the rest of my life. I can die, go to God's arms, and say, he didn't say I'm sorry. And God's going to say, so? So what? What did you do? How did you clean your side of the street? So why do I need to make those amends? Because I'm responsible for my actions. There's no devil made me do it in working this step. And I relate that, again, to that bitterness and anger that we all harbor toward people who injure us. This hurts because it drives a wedge, most importantly, between us and God. And then it drives a wedge between us and other people. If I don't clear up my side of the street, the chance that I'm going to have a good and loving relationship with another man that I would marry is not going to happen, because I'm going to bring all that load of baggage with me because I haven't dealt with it. And it doesn't matter what my ex-husband thinks or says or does. What matters is what I think and say and do. We try not to cause injury to other people when we recognize what our problems are. And we do this because we need to be loving as God instructed us to be. So there are two specific people that we need to put on our list. They need to be at the top of the list. You would think my husband, ex-husband, and my kids would be pretty far up there, and they are. That my friends that I lied to and, you know, led down the garden path when I was a teenager would be on the top of the list, and they are. But number one on the list is God. So I have to have a willingness to make amends to God for my wrong being. It should be a given that we need to do this. I need to examine where I have broken relationship with him. And I need to look at how I've entered into wrong being with him. And until I fix that part, I can't fix the next part. And that next person is me. And it might seem weird to have to make an amends to yourself, but when you're sitting there, you're thinking, oh my goodness, I can't forgive myself. I'm too dirty. I can't do it. I've done too many awful things. I can't forgive myself. I can forgive anybody else of anything, but I can't forgive myself. So this step involves a willingness to forgive myself as God has already done that work. He's already forgiven me. He forgot about it. You know, when I dial up his phone and I say, hey, about that thing I did, he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's done. Complete. Finished. I don't remember it. As far as the east is from the west, I've got no clue what you're talking about. and he wants nothing more than us to abide in a loving relationship with him in our right being and able to love everyone as he loves us. So who am I to say that I cannot, will not forgive myself when God can? And he can enable my healing through this. It's kind of like, you know, you have to take yourself off the cross because he already did that. We don't have to be up there. That's his job. And we don't need to do his job. So in order to proceed down my list, I have to be right with God. And I have to be right with myself because I need to make it right with you. Now, the second part of this step is a little bit more involved. It's more than just jotting names down and why I need to say what I need to say. It involves a heart change. And that is becoming willing to make amends to them all, not just the ones we know aren't going to lash out at us. Not just the ones that are going to say, oh, honey, it's okay, because it's not. If that name is serious enough for God to put it on your list, it's not okay. You need to love them more than you love yourself. Without that, you can't go and say, I'm sorry, or it will just be, I'm sorry. It won't be, I hurt you in whatever. Please forgive me. There's a vast difference between I'm sorry and please forgive me. I'm sorry is, and especially when you're in recovery, is, dang it, I got caught. I got caught. Got caught with my pants down, got caught with a liquor bottle, got caught with the drugs in my car, got caught beating my wife, got caught beating my kids. Got caught not loving people. I'm sorry. No, you're not. You're sorry you got caught. And there's a vast difference, and we need to understand that. So I want you to note that on this step, it does not say make amends. It says be willing to make them. So at this point, the point is being willing. So what does that look like? This is taking what we've experienced already and accomplished through steps 1 through 7 and using all of that to become, wait for it, because this is going to hurt a little, cheerfully consenting or ready to make amends. You get to do it with a smile on your face. It's going to be awesome. Cheerfully consenting and ready to make amends. And of course, that flies in the face of our flight or fight reflex. The last possible thing we want to do is be cheerful about making amends, let alone making that amends. The survival instinct makes us more willing to run from the encounter than to make the actual amends. So this is where the sacrifice comes in. That little ram we've got set aside, we got to sacrifice that baby. It's time. We have to sacrifice our pride, our need to be right, our need to save face, our need to gloss over our sin. Our tendency is to ignore when God nudges us to seek forgiveness so that our relationships are righted. And a lot of us sit there and we kind of isolate, and we pretend nothing's happening, and inside our hearts are just going, and you're like, what in the world is going on? I think I'm going to die. My heart won't stop. It's not killing you. It's making you live. It's making you alive. And we also sit there and say, well, God never spoke to me. He's never talked to me. So we think, is that you, God? Can't be. I've never heard from you before. Why would you start talking to me now? Believe me. When you hear from God that you need to make these amends, you're hearing him. You're really hearing him. and you're going to hear him as soon as you become truly willing to take this step. Because he wants our will. We have to sacrifice our will because it's not about us. It's about everybody else. So we need to take a look at this as God does and take it to heart. So would you, Thad, put up Romans 12:18 for me, please? If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. It's pretty difficult to do that when we got all our crap hanging out between us. You know, we're looking around it. It's an elephant in the room. The elephant keeps crapping. We keep getting dung piles everywhere, and we're just looking at, hey, how you doing? And they're looking at you like, dude, you stink. This stinks. You got to fix this. And you're like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. We need to clear the room. Got to clear the room. You know you're wrong. They know you're wrong. But we have an elevated expectation of how we think we want people to treat us. We think everyone should love me. Everyone should be kind to me. Everyone should clear the way for me so that I can have the life I want. We believe we're entitled to the best treatment possible by everyone that we come across. Everyone all the time. But we refuse to do the same for others. This avoidance can become an Olympic sport by the time we're done with it. We can meddle in this stuff. But it's going to be metals made of wood, hay, stubble, and it's going to get burned up in the end. It's not going to have any value. Won't have any worth. We want the best treatment possible. We refuse to do the same for other people. But at some point, you have to decide to take the better way in order to live at peace with people. And we are blessed, truly blessed, because God tells us how to accomplish this. I'm going to put up Luke 6:31. We've all heard this in a different way. This is from the NET Bible. Treat others in the same way that you would want them to treat you. We've heard this as the golden rule since we were that big. When I was in high school, I learned that it was actually in the Bible. I had a list of 1,000 things to memorize, things people said, and this was on that list. And I thought, dude, it's from the Bible. I can learn that really, really fast and easy. And I did, but I didn't do what it said. You can memorize anything, but if you don't take action on this, then the words are worthless. They're empty and they're hollow. You have to treat others in the same way that you want them to treat you. So if you're out there screaming at people in traffic, do not be surprised if they're screaming back. Just don't. This seems both responsible, reasonable, simple, but it's hard. Simple does not equal easy. It's hard. Making an amend is taking that chance to make a change for the better, to correct our faults. To accomplish this, we must accept the love and forgiveness of God. And then we have to be willing to seek forgiveness and accept it from both God and others. We must love others as we want to be loved. We must love enough to be willing to make things right with them. Love is like a muscle. If we refuse to use it, it's going to atrophy and we're going to become crippled. You see people like that all the time, both emotionally and physically. You see them physically in a wheelchair that their muscles have atrophied and they cannot get up and walk. You see it in bitter people that their hearts have become atrophied and they cannot love. And God calls us to be better than that. He doesn't want us to be emotional cripples. He doesn't want us to be spiritual cripples. He wants our hearts to beat as he intended them to beat. So I kind of alluded to this at the beginning, and Louise put a name on it for me last week. God has been tenderizing me a lot lately, and in a lot of ways. He's been squeezing my heart, and he's squeezing it in rhythm with his own to empty it of all my selfishness and fill it with his love for other people. And as I said earlier, I had made amends to my ex-husband in the past. And I'll tell you now, I don't want to step on the toes of step nine, but it wasn't what I thought was going to happen. I was willing to do this, and I made the appointment. And I had to make an amends in front of his new wife. And his words to me were, "Okay, cool, thanks." Was I wrong in making the amends? No. Because the amends weren't about him. The amends were about my willingness to see my sin for what it was and to move that step closer. You know, the steps that we do here, the steps closer to our relationship with God. To come into the folds of his garment and say, "Yep, that's right where I want you, right here by my side. That's where I want you." Had nothing to do with my ex-husband. It had nothing to do with his new wife. It had everything to do with me and with God. Lately, I have found myself back in that process again. If you haven't seen I Can Only Imagine, please trot yourselves down this afternoon, see that movie. It deals with those difficult relationships. And as I was watching that movie last week, my immediate thought was, what have I done to cause a break in relationship between my ex-husband and his children? My heart is broken for him now because he doesn't have the relationship with them that I do. Now, I'll grant you, there are things that he's done that he's reaping what he sowed. But as far as it concerns me, I have to leave my bitterness and my anger and my mistrust of his actions and the way he is, because that's the way he is. And God is telling me, hey, you got to fix this stuff. You have to fix it. And I'm like, well, how am I going to do that? He lives 1,300 miles away. I don't have his phone number. I could get it. But I'm looking at what kind of amend I need to make here. Because my heart is broken for him. My heart has never been broken for that man. Never. But today it is. As I stand here right now, my heart is breaking for him. Because I know he does not have this relationship with God that I am so desperately running toward. And I know he doesn't have that relationship with his children that they all need. My girls and boys need their dad. And I know I have partly deprived them of that. That's my responsibility. So I need to make amends. So I'm holding on to Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trusting in the Lord and leaning not on my own understanding. And I'm making it so he can straighten my path. And when you're on that straight path, you're going to be able to love people because you're going to be walking with God. In the book, The Ragamuffin Gospel by Brennan Manning, he relates a story from a surgeon who, in order to remove a tumor from a young lady's face, had to sever a nerve to a muscle. The young woman asks if her mouth is always going to be crooked, and the doctor, yes, it will. And her husband says, "It's all right. I think it's cute. I like it." The surgeon then writes, unmindful. He bends to kiss her crooked mouth. And I am so close that I can see how he twists his own lips to accommodate hers and to show her that their kiss still works. God has no reason to make amends to us. He created a perfect world, and we reject both that world and its creator. Yet his love for us in our crooked state caused God to send his perfect son to be contorted and twisted and damaged to fit my sin. He was God's kiss on our twisted lives, God's kiss on our damaged world. He had no reason to make any amends, yet he showed us the way that amends need to be done. God did what he must do. He was willing to offer all he had to restore our relationship to him. He risked so much on this lot of people that can still choose to reject him. We still can choose that. We can just say, nope, not interested. We don't have to accept his overture of love. And that overture results in a right relationship with him. People can and do reject the offer of amends. Fear of that rejection cannot stop you from doing what God has called you to do. And I know I'm fearful because I don't know what amends are going to look like. You don't have to know what it looks like. It looks like love, blanket, covers, done. But we can't let that fear to preclude or stop us from being willing to make those amends. So we have to be willing to put others ahead of ourselves the way that God put us ahead of Jesus and the need to make the sacrifice for us to bring us into relationship with them. We have to be willing to go to whatever lengths God calls us to amend the relationships that we have damaged. Our willingness and our surrender is what's called for here. Loving God as he loved us, to make life right with those we've harmed. You know, decades ago, I was in a job. I've had lots of weird jobs. I taught preschool for a while. And when I was teaching there, I found myself paying more attention to the 34 kids that I had that were all 3 and 4 year olds that were very, very damaged children. And not enough time was spent being concerned about my own. And God really convicted me about that. And I'm like, okay, God, if you don't want me in this job, then you're going to have to make it clear. You're going to have to give me another job. And you're going to have to make this a smooth transition because I don't want to move out of this job. I found some value in that. I found my worth in that, being able to help these little kids. And God's like, yep, you got to do this. And I'll give you a job when I feel darn good and ready. And so I wrote up my resignation. And I got in my van. And I turned the key, and I was listening to a radio station that was a Christian station that played a lot of hymns, and I Surrender All was what was playing. And I said, God, that's not funny. And I meant it. But I knew that he was honoring my sacrifice, my willingness to make things right with my family. I knew that our finances would be taken care of. I knew that I'd be able to take care of my kids and still provide for them. But my sacrifice was called for. It was necessary. And God didn't think it was funny either. God thought that it was an appropriate sacrifice on the altar of my life to make things right with him. That's what we're called to, period. We're called to love every single person in this room, every single person on this street in this town. I don't care what they've done. We are to love them the way that God loves us. And we need to keep in mind that that sacrifice that God made of twisting his son to fit our need was very real and something that we need to take advantage of. I'm doing things a little different. I'm calling an audible. I'm going to ask my brother Caleb out. I'm going to pray really quick, and then I'm going to ask Caleb to just lead us in that song, I Surrender All. Just going to do it a cappella, and when he's done singing, we'll be dismissed, okay? Let's pray. God, I thank you for this teaching that you've allowed me to bring. And I pray, Lord, that your love for each person in this place just flows from here out to this community. I pray, Lord, that if there is anyone here that does not know you and has not experienced the benefit of that sacrifice, that they will not leave this room until they know you. I'm not much, God, for doing the follow me prayers or anything, but I'll put it out there. If you need to know God, just tell him, God, I'm wrong. I'm a sinner. I need you, and I give my life to you. It's that simple. That simple. Just let God do his work. Amen.